Hello and welcome to another episode of the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Lusa, and today I'm joined by Jane McLaughlin, and she is a director at George James Limited. Hi, Jane. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello, Adrian. Thank you for inviting me.
You are welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you on here. Thank you so much for making time. So Jane and I connected a while ago, and her story and the focus of the business George James Limited made me think that it will be such value to have her on the podcast. I know the podcast, we say we focused on Africa and we focused on the biotech industry in Africa, but Jane and George James Limited, they have such a broad scope of services and really some special attention to startups. And among other areas, they focus on the biotech, medtech, pharma industries, that I thought it would be such great value to have Jane on the podcast. So just some background about Jane. Jane has been a director at George James for the last 17 years. She has a degree in chemistry and an MBA. She also has 8 years experience. So prior to George James, she was a research scientist, followed by 9 years in pan-European technical support, marketing and sales management roles, promoting high technology instrumentation, reagents, and consumable products in the areas such as chromatography, spectroscopy, thermal analysis, and biotechnology and related software. And this was services to the pharmaceutical, biotech, food, chemical, and petrochemical market sectors. So for the last 30 years, Jane has been in recruitment and human resources, where she has focused on the life sciences and interrelated technology sectors. Here, Jane has applied her broad scientific and business experience to successfully complete many international research assignments in instrumentation, specialty kits and reagents, pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, medical devices, diagnostics, fine chemicals, and the contract research sectors. So yeah, that's a background, broad background about Jane. And you would come to know that as we carry on this conversation, how not only long her history has been in the sector, but how valuable and how experienced she has really contributed to the growth of biotech pharma in Europe and other markets. So Jane, thank you so much again for making time. And if you don't mind, I know I've kind of ran through your profile there, but can you give us in your own words, how you came from being a research scientist to where you are today in George James?
Yeah, I was one of these people from an era where girls were not encouraged in the world of science. It was an absolute battle when I was at school to be allowed to study all the science subjects. And so I actually left school at 16 to pursue A-levels at a college, at a university instead of at school. And I then by chance came across a government sponsored scheme at the time where you could join a laboratory and do all your education part time. So I followed that route and I worked for 3 different companies in lab based roles while I got that education. And when I qualified with my degree, the company I was working with offered me a promotion, but it was out of the lab into a manufacturing opportunity, which I have to say was great fun, but I realised wasn't quite why I'd spent all that time getting the degree. And so I was attracted by a job advert, which took me to work for PerkinElmer in their R&D and technical marketing team. And I had the 9-year career with them, which took me into a job in the Nordics. And I lived out in Sweden for 3 of the years that I did that job. And I did a highly technical role there. And I also became the sales manager out there during that time. But it was when Sweden wasn't in the EU. So I was on a work permit. And so I had to come back to the UK after a period of time. And there was a lot of change going on in the business I was in. And by sheer chance, I got talking to a guy who'd been the HR director at Glaxo when they were really growing their R&D team hugely. And he was a PhD chemist who'd gone into HR and had become very aware that the sort of support consultancies stroke agencies that were meant to be out there to help him build his R&D team in pharmaceuticals knew nothing about the world of developing drugs. And so he saw an opportunity. And so he left Glaxo and set up a headhunt company to specialize in pharma and biotech initially. And looking for a change of career, I joined him. He took a real leap of faith with me because I was quite commercial. I could talk to customers, but I'd done very little hiring. I'd hired a few salespeople, but that was my experience on the HR side. But he was a great teacher. He trained me well. He taught me good writing skills as well. He taught me all about the pharmaceutical industry. It was the cusp of the early biotech. So I learned, as with the biotechs as they grew, more med tech came on stream, more diagnostics. And I still carried on doing a little bit of work with the instrumentation companies, all the new data systems that were starting to be developed at that time. You know, computing power was starting to take off around then. So as a lot, some of the early data management systems that you're so familiar in R&D companies now, they were really, really brand new then. And I did a little bit in high specialty food, very high-end household and personal products. It was an era where a lot of the things we take for granted were being developed in the food industry. The first loaf spreadable butters that didn't freeze solid in your freezer, the first soft scoop ice creams, all this breakthrough technology was coming through. And these guys were doing as clever a science in the food labs as they were doing in the pharma labs. So all of those guys were my target customers. So people like Glaxo and AstraZeneca and Unilever. And I also did a little bit work in the nuclear industry as well, and some of the green energy that's coming on stream. And so I had 5 great years with him. I moved onto a city headhunt company when that business got sold. I had several years with them until working with them right through the 2000 bubble burst. And in the early 2000s, the whole pharma industry was changing. It was becoming much more SMEs I was working with. And, you know, the big pharma companies were downsizing and merging around then. And I joined up my capability with my ex-colleagues from PerkinElmer, who had set up George James in 99, to build a big recruitment capability that was targeted largely at small companies.
That is such an impressive journey, career journey. I mean, you've been through the lots of it, from hands-on to the commercial to the HR side of it. So I would really love to share in that perspective that you have, because currently, I think Africa is at that phase where Europe probably was in the early 2000s, where the biotech sector is beginning to take off. And yeah, it's great to get that perspective of all of these sort of opportunities where one can craft their career, you know, not just looking at research, hands-on, lab-based career. Yes?
I think there's 2 things I'd like to say. I do a lecture for the London PhD programs. There's about 5 or 6 universities that send students to this lecture. And it's deliberately done to talk to people about the huge diversity of jobs that are out there that aren't just about staying based in a lab. And I think even today, that people going from their degree and to a PhD are still being very channeled into thinking the world is only a laboratory opportunity. And there are great other opportunities yes. out there for people. And at the end of this, Adrienne, I'll share a single slide from one of my presentations, which just gives a picture of all the different roles that you can think about doing. I think two things I'll say. Open up your mind. Embrace chance encounters. Yeah. And be brave. I have changed my career path three times. I did take quite a big financial hit each time to make that transition, but I've always won down the road. It might have been a tough 18 months because you're stepping back to learn a new skill, but you know, and it wasn't easy. I was married. There was children involved. You know, you've got bills to pay, but you know, my husband at the time was very supportive that we could manage with me earning a bit less for 18 months. We had to choose, you know, we couldn't have a holiday. We had to keep driving the same old car. But we did it, and it was great. And it's allowed me to have a most fulfilling career path. You know, be brave, I say to people, be brave. If your passion is to do something different, you should look to do it. Don't get stuck in a job that you're really unhappy with, or you're getting bored with, or you think isn't stretching you anymore. Yeah. And I think gone are the days where people leave university, go into a big company, and their career path is mapped out until the day they retire. I think we have to be more responsible for our careers than we ever were. You know, and if you feel your career path is being blocked, then really do open up your mind to what else you might be able to do. There's quite a lot of things you can learn with evening classes. You know, the world of the internet has brought the world ever smaller. So if there isn't a training course online in your own country, you can join an open university course here in the UK and do the education remotely.
Yes.
I mean, I still do some training myself. Yes. My teacher is in Chile at the moment. And at 12 o'clock today, we will have a 1 hour lesson with me in the UK and she's in Chile. So the world is very small when it comes to broadening your skill set.
Fabulous, fabulous. Really great advice. And I have a good part of my audience that is among people that are looking to, you know, craft their way, their career within the biotech space. So this is really great advice for anyone listening. Now moving on to where it really interests, say, the entrepreneurs. I wanted us to get into George James, your current company. What does George James actually do, and how is this beneficial to, say, startups in the biotech sector specifically?
Yeah, we have three branches to the business. We have recruitment, we have the training division, and we have a sort of corporate development group. Briefly just tell you what those guys do. Some fundraising. So that's helpful to early stage companies. It's quite niche what they do, but they do a bit of fundraising. Mm-hmm. They also do buy and sell assets for people, do mergers and acquisitions. So they're mostly, but they do quite a lot of work with entrepreneurs who have developed something and they need to take it to market for the first time. So they help them with their go-to-market strategy, whether that's in Europe or EMEA or in America. But so they can help people who have no commercial skill to develop the commercial side of launching a product. The training division trains everything from an individual CEO of a young startup that wants to learn how to do a good investor-ready presentation through to training salespeople that are working for a company as big as Thermo Fisher. And they also train applications people, and they also train service engineers, anybody who has to be customer-facing that needs to understand communication skills, presentation skills, negotiation skills. The skill sets are quite broad. And if you go to our website, you can see all the courses that you can do. If you want some individual training, you can buy our modules in bite-sized 90-minute chunks. They're about £300 a session, which is not out of reach of even some of the smaller, less well-financed businesses. The recruitment is where we big time help the startups, as well as doing the retained search work that, you know, people like me are famed for. I have spent the last 5 years building out two databases, which we offer for free to the world of startups. So people who are pre-Series A funding round. There is a consultant database. So if someone says to me, I'm developing a new diagnostic and I'm going to have to put some quality tools in place for that product. Can you find me a quality person to help me? Mm-hmm. If you need a consultant to work with you on a short-term product or a project or a day, a week, you can probably find somebody through my network. And there are people all over the globe in that network. The other service is for finding your board members. So non-exec directors, chairman, advisors, and also part-time senior people. Some of the sort of entrepreneurial driven spin-outs suddenly realize that the founding CEO is never going to be able to be fronting, raising the first major fundraise. So they need sometimes a full-time. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing a full-time CEO role for a small entrepreneurial business. But I equally well get asked for a part-time CEO who can come in, write the business plan, engage the investment community, do the investor presentations, and help them raise the money. Sometimes they also want a part-time finance director as well on their board, maybe a day a week, that sort of thing. So you can have access to those people for free. The total mechanisms how that works is quite time consuming to explain, but I can share a document that Adrienne can share on to people if they want to engage with me on how those services work. But it allows people to have top global talent around their technology so that their business plan is solid, so the investors have confidence and therefore will invest in the business so it can be moved to the next phase of the development pathway.
Great. And just from that last point that you've made, I wanted to elaborate a little bit more. Why would it be important for someone to look for quality people, either as part of the team, so like a CXO team, or even to have quality experienced people as part of their non-executive or board of directors and advisors to speak? So can you maybe get into a bit more what is the importance of that?
Well, the reason I built this database, if I rewind back to 2015, several conferences that year, we talked to investors and we talked to some of the experienced CEOs and also a few of the very first time CEOs. And what we found was that certainly here in Europe, the investors were recycling the same NED talent and it was getting very old. It wasn't up to date with the latest technologies and it was very white male at the time. They wanted cultural diversity. They wanted people from other markets. They wanted to see a few ladies in the mix. Mm-hmm. And so that was a problem. The investors wanted more diversity of NEDs that would bring more relevant skill sets around these new technologies. We also talked to the sort of CEOs. And we found that many people had very broken boards, even if they had a proper board at all. And so the boards weren't working. They weren't providing the right support for the CEOs. The business plans had holes in it because they didn't have all the right skill sets to advise the business. And we were seeing people failing. We saw great technology that was getting seed money and grant money. But the first time they needed, say, £1 million, it wasn't happening, because the investors didn't have the confidence that the founding team were getting the right mentorship and the board was not strong enough. They didn't see understanding of the governance that was required. They just weren't going to risk their money. And so these businesses were failing. Technology was being either completely lost or it was being sold for a minute value, a percentage of its value. People were picking up great IP really cheap because the people who should have made money out of their idea just couldn't raise the money to support it. So it's all about the fact that you do need good, experienced people relevant to your area of technology around your business so that you have proper advice. So your business plan has got completely completed. You know, you've thought through the manufacturing way it's going to go, come to market, how it's going to be manufactured, how it's going to go through the regulatory processes, which markets you're going to sell in, who's going to buy it, who's going to pay for it. You know, you may never take your product to market yourself. You may always know that it's going to have to be sold on to complete the phase three clinical trials if it's a drug. But you still have to show the investors that you understand how your idea is going to ultimately make money, because that's the only way the investors are going to share their money with you, is that they can see that but by investing now and your project moves to the next phase, you will end up with greater value that someone else will pay for and they will get their money back. You know, the money guys are not, you know, they may say they're interested in the science, but fundamentally they're in it to make money. So, you know, you need the best possible people around you to convince them that you're a safe bet and you're, you know, and just great IP around your technology isn't going to get you there. You have to have the right advice to get the money to move your project forward.
Yeah. That is very relevant, especially to the biotech sector, which is reputed for being very high risk. So I can definitely see the value of de-risking that by having the right support people with prior. I know you mentioned offline that in your database, you have a lot of people who have, you know, prior been founders, CEOs themselves, who have, you know, sold businesses, been in situations of growth and scale. And so to tap into all of that. And I know also just to emphasize that you have taken it upon yourself to make access to your database free for startups, but for other businesses, they actually have to pay a significant fee. So this is not like some free, you know, chip service. It's actually real time.
This is at the moment 1,500 top executives from all over the world. And I really mean all over the world. The last promotion I put out, I had an application from India, Iran, all over Europe, US, obviously UK. But we've got people all over the world that are on that database. And it grows by the day. I add approximately one new person a day to the database. So, they have incredible talent.
And with your experience, I can imagine the quality of your network, you know, having gone through the career journey that you've gone through and haven't spent this long in hiring and headhunting. So you definitely know who and how to pick people to put on such a database. So I can only imagine the quality of that database. And maybe why did you choose to make this free for startups?
I say a little bit entrepreneurial, that we saw some incredibly great science fail, you know, which would have been game changing, you know, in the world of healthcare. You know, just died because they couldn't raise the money because the business plan had holes in it. And then we also recognize that as a headhunter, I make my money out of people who need permanent recruitment. If they never raise any money, they're never going to need my services. They'll never be able to pay for it. So it's a little bit of a long-term business development play for me. If I help them hire an NED today that helps them raise money in the next 12 months, then in their next financial year, they may need to hire somebody to run a clinical trial for them. They may need their first regulatory expert. You know, they may need to hire a medic. They may need, a new project leader. You know, I never know what they're going to ask me for, but you know, by helping them get themselves business ready so they raise the next round of money, there's a chance they'll need my help. So I do get payback. I'm starting to get some payback, but it's taken 5 years. You know, I've had to put a lot of my personal cash into doing this. But, you know, I want to see great science mm-hmm. survive. I want to see the next breakthrough in cancers make it to the market. I want to see the best diagnostic tools get out there. You know, some of the ideas that these guys, these entrepreneurial guys have got, it's just breathtaking. You know, I've got working with a company in the sort of nano robot space. How they even conceive these ideas, I don't know. But it's breakthrough technology for diagnostics. Now, it's going to be another 6 or 7 years before it gets to the market, but it's a totally revolutionary way of doing diagnostics. And I want to support that.
Absolutely fascinating, really. And with the interaction that you have with the entrepreneurs and even being from the headhunting side, I'm sure there's a lot of talk, and even the training side, there's a lot of talk about skills. And I'm curious, what sort of skills can you highlight that someone taking on an entrepreneurship role within the biotech or the scientific sector should refine? Maybe it's not their usual training by their own academic background, but something that it's really critical for their success in entrepreneurship. Are there some that you can highlight?
I think the first thing that I will say is the biggest reason that entrepreneurial companies fail is because the founders don't recognize that they have big skills gaps and refuse to step back and bring in more commercially and financially sound senior people into the business. You know, it's great to be a founding CEO, but when you get your technology, maybe in 18 months down the track, if you really want to make it in the future, you need to bring into your business a commercially and financially savvy CEO to help you learn how to run a commercial business. Step back, become the CSO or the CTO, the Chief Technical Officer or the Chief Scientific Officer, but learn from the best. Bring in the best, learn from the best. Maybe take some additional education in commercial subjects, do an MBA, something like that. Take a financial course, but learn from somebody where you can see it done right. Work with him on the fundraising. Learn how you do it. Learn from the best how to do a great investor presentation. You know, be a sponge for knowledge. You may, next time round, you may be able to do it by yourself. You might need to do that twice before you're ready to be that top of the food chain entrepreneurial CEO. But don't try and do it too early because you don't have the skills and you generally don't know what skills you don't have, and therefore you don't know why your business plan's got holes in it. You know, if you're a great scientist, you probably know nothing about the manufacturing and supply chain. You know nothing about the clinical journey your product's got to go through. You know nothing about the regulatory framework into which your product's got to sit. Do you know anything about market access, pricing and reimbursement? You might not have even heard the word spoken to you before. There's so many bits of the jigsaw puzzle that has to come together, even very early on, even before your products even pass proof of concept sometimes, that some of that thought process has got to go in to the business plan to make it investor ready. So say, bring in the best talent you can find and just pick their brains and grow your skill set. And then in 5 years' time, you'll have made some money from this project because you've brought in the best people to make sure you get some money out of your first idea. And then you can go and be your second or your third time entrepreneur and get better and better every time.
Great advice. Really great advice. I love that. And of course, we can see where the service that you provide, giving people access to this top talent, comes in very handy on the journey to gaining and getting good at entrepreneurship. Also, one thing is you made a point about what was perceived as a gap in boards and in general the teams that were present early on in biotech. You made mention of things like a lack of women and also a cultural diversity within those boards. I just want to ask a little bit, you being a woman, and you've also made mention of the fact that initially you had to make some sacrifices in order to put your career together. What do you think in this day and age can be done to ensure that women get into, you know, more involved in biotech, but also in senior leadership in biotech? Is there anything that your company is doing to promote women in those positions?
Yes, I mean, I do have a subset of my NED database, which is the ladies. I wish it was larger. There's still a lack of women who get to the very senior role. I would hope to think that in this modern day and age, more women are being encouraged to be early career entrepreneurs, to get out the starting blocks and get some experience under their belt before they choose to maybe have a... I think COVID has actually helped us, because before COVID, there was a great perception that you couldn't do a job unless you could be in an office between 9 and 5. You know, I think that time has gone. So I think the ability to balance a interesting entrepreneurial scientific job and still manage maybe a couple of children growing up and still have proper time for them has been gifted us by COVID, because people now recognize you can take your child to school, work from 10 till 3, do things with your children, and maybe go back to your desk for a couple of hours in the evening. It doesn't have, your job doesn't have to be done between certain fixed core hours. So I think that's going to help a lot of ladies stay in the game. I encourage them to start early. You know, don't, you know, trust in your ability. The lecture I give to the postdocs and PhD program I go to in London, I would say it's pretty balanced now between men and women that are on that course. It's very international. They have a lot of international students that come in to do those courses and postdoc in another country. So we do see a huge ethnic spread in that lecture room. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage, if you've got an idea, you know, get in early and be an early entrepreneur, because it's, once you've proven yourself, it's easier to get back into part-time opportunities. It's easier to carry on building your career set. And if you want to take a bit of time out, just use that time well. You know, do some part-time education. Mm-hmm. You know, develop your commercial skill set, develop your regulatory knowledge, develop your clinical appreciation. There's lots of short-term, part-time, everything from just a taster session through to diplomas, through to additional degrees. You know, I mean, I do know people who've gone through and done a whole law degree after their PhD or postdoc. I've known people who've done some of the regulatory training, the patent attorney training. You know, there's lots of, they're quite hard work. They're pretty full on, as is an MBA. But there's lots of other mini versions of those which can give you some pretty good additional appreciation beyond your science.
Amazing. And bringing us back to what you mentioned at the beginning somewhere, saying you had a chart of sort of the possible career path. I think this will be a great time to share that, Jane. Are you able to share?
Oh, I haven't got it to hand at the moment, but I'll find it and you can share it on.
Okay. Okay.
But it's literally a chart of all the roles you can do in the world of sort of pharma, sort of diagnostics, stroke biotech. And it covers everything from all the R&D roles through to all of the, you know, development roles or the manufacturing roles or the quality roles or the regulatory roles or the commercial roles. Mm-hmm. It's hugely diverse, the things you can turn your mindset to. You know, the question you have to ask yourself is, what interests you most? You know, I see some great career transitions, you know, people, just to give you a couple of examples, people who do a pharmacy basic training often transition very well into regulatory or quality because they have a natural attention to detail. You know, so, mm-hmm. you know, people who do get into the program development skill set in research then can often follow through into tech transfer and even on into manufacturing as their career yeah. advances. You know, if you mm-hmm. if you've got an interest in doing something different, find a way to get yourself into the work that's on the edges of where you do today transitions with what somebody else is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, do your best to get mm-hmm. into multidisciplinary teams so you can learn from other people around you yeah. what they're doing.
Yeah. And I know that you mentioned offline something about networking and how valuable that is. Do you want to make some comments on that? Because I see that before coming into a more commercial role, I was very much isolated. And I think even the construct of training sciences keeps us really isolated in our little bubbles. Even within bigger disciplines, you're locked up within your niche. But just opening yourself up and networking with people, you mentioned earlier chance encounters. You want to say something about the role of networking and how important you've seen it in either shaping your career or even making a business successful?
Sure. I mean, obviously, I'm a big LinkedIn user. I've used that from when it was first created. Everybody listening to this yeah. podcast should invite me to their network. My network is getting close to 20,000.
Yes.
And everybody yes. will find someone useful in my network if they want to reach out beyond. I would say that the LinkedIn groups are very good. Because you can not only join mm-hmm. the groups associated with the technology you're working with at the moment. I mean, it's always a good idea to get into those groups so you see what other people are posting and things that are relevant, very relevant to what you're doing now. But if you then are starting to develop an interest mm-hmm. in another field, join those groups. Very few of them turn you down. If they see you're a scientist, mm-hmm. you know, you're not in regulatory, but you'd like to join one of the regulatory groups, very rarely will they say you can't join, you know, and then you can start to network with people that are mm-hmm. doing something different. One of the best things to do is to, if you've got face-to-face networking opportunities going on in your area, go to those networking opportunities. I don't know, obviously, so much about what's going on in your location, but here in Europe, for every expensive conference that takes place, there's quite a lot of low-cost or even free 2 to 3 hour sessions that go on. You can turn up for an evening and have a coffee. They sometimes have a mm-hmm. speaker. And you'll meet all sorts of people there that you didn't know before. Now, some people say to me, oh, that's mm-hmm. really scary. I'm going to place. I don't know anybody. You know, how will I have the confidence to yeah. talk to someone I don't know? If you are a shy networker, I give you one amazing piece of advice. Arrive really early. Because if you walk into a room,
yeah.
it's a bit scary because the room is more or less empty. But I can guarantee the next half a dozen people that walk into that room won't want to be standing around on their own looking like a spare part. So they'll gravitate to you towards you, and they'll start talking to you because they don't want to feel lonely. And suddenly you'll have a group of six people that you didn't know before that will be talking to you. And then once you've built your confidence, then you can break away and talk to other people. And just read the body language. If there's a couple of ladies having a chat and there's a mm-hmm. gap, just walk in and join the gap. And they'll say hello. They'll say, oh, who are you? You know, and don't underestimate. People like talking about themselves. So all you have to be brave enough to do is say, yes. oh, who are you? Tell me about you. What do you do? And people will start talking and you can just listen.
Yeah.
So networking is not as scary yeah. as a lot of people think it is. But do it, because you never know who you will be talking to. It might be your future boss. It might mm-hmm. be someone you can collaborate with.
Yes.
It might be someone who'll tell you about a whole area of technology and science you never knew existed. And you think, oh my God, that's so exciting. I'd like that to be my next area of work. you'll talk to people. Mm. You think, well, that was a bit of a waste of time. You'll walk away from some evenings thinking, I suppose the refreshments were okay, but you know, I didn't spend my evening that well. But then you'll have other nights, yeah, where you think, oh my God, that was such a great evening. I've met six people that I would never have met any other way. So you have to put yourself out there a little bit. You know, it's not going to happen unless you push yourself, but it's well worth pushing yourself.
Great. And I definitely want to emphasize the invitation to connect with Jane. It's Jane McLaughlin, spelled MC. Okay, her name Jane is spelled J-A-Y-N-E, and her surname is M-C-L-A-U. G-H-L-I-N. So you'll find her on LinkedIn. Connect with her, definitely, because like she told you, she has almost 20,000 followers and definitely quality network to be part of. On that, Jane, thank you so much for taking time to share your experience, your wisdom, your advice with the audience of the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. Personally, I learned so much. Definitely taking last tip about arriving early to networking events. I tend to usually arrive either on time or a little bit late. But I can see the value of arriving early. It'll cut off a lot of the work for me. So thank you so much for all the useful tips and bits of knowledge that you've shared with us on this podcast. And I also know that you made a promise, offline, that we were going to do kind of a series looking at how to take charge of your career. So we will work on that in the new year. Yeah, Jane?
Exactly. I just like to finish today. If anybody's got a challenge, anything around recruitment or career development, just feel free to drop me a LinkedIn note or drop me an email. Once we're connected, you'll see my email. I'm always happy to spend a few minutes pointing people in the right direction. You know, and obviously, as I now build my network more extensively, you know, in your particular geography, then hopefully I can make more introductions and hopefully more people from that geography will join my NED and consultant database. And if anybody listened to this podcast and feels they're experienced enough to join those networks now, please just write a little note to me. I'd be delighted to add you.
Great. Yes. And on that note, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. I've been your host, Adrian Lursa, and I hope you learned quite a bit from our guest today. And please don't be selfish. Share this podcast with people in your network so they might also become as well-versed with what is happening in the Africa Biotech space. And until next time, thank you for tuning in. Keep well, keep safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.